Okay. So Toskan Lechot Asanya, really, want to extend the Hakadosh Tov to Rav Ari and to your Bayim for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to learn with you. As I said before, it's really Zechus to get to come and learn Torah here in Eretz Yisrael. As Rav Ari mentioned, I'm going to be speaking a little bit about the yeshiva after. I always feel a little guilty speaking about yeshivas in America to a bachram that are learning in Eretz Yisrael, but that's only for guys that are coming back. For those of you that are staying, you should continue to learn well. And if you don't have to think about that, then you should continue to be matzliach. For those of you that are at some point coming back, this is something that you'll have to deal with, and that is the lesson that we take away, and I would say even those of you that stay in Eretz Yisrael, but you're going to leave the Dalad Kostle based Medrash, at some point you're going to have to deal with life as a Ben Torah in the secular world. I think that's one of the most central lessons of the story of Hanukkah. If you look at the Al Nisim, the first thing that we say about our struggle with Yavon is what? Anyone want to take a look? We're going to be using this sheet. You could, if you don't have a sheet, you can take a look at the text elsewhere. But what's the first thing that we say? We're celebrating the story of Hanukkah. What's the first thing that we say that Yavon sought to do? It's not a trick. It's right in the text. Lashkicham Tarasecha. Lashkicham Tarasecha, right? If you heard of Moshe Shmuz about Hanukkah before, if you heard anything spoken about Yavon, that's one refrain that you're going to constantly hear. Lashkicham Tarasecha. They try to get Klai Yisrael. What's Lashkicham Tarasecha? What does Lashkicham Tarasecha mean? To forget the Torah. Does anyone have a problem with that language? Forget the Torah? What does that mean? Forget the Torah. How do you make someone forget their Torah? Good question, right? Doesn't say they forbade them from learning Torah. It says they tried to make them forget their Torah. In fact, I was just looking at the Rambam before. The Rambam's Lashon, when he talks about the story of Hanukkah, by the way, just interesting aside, and you can speak to your Rebbeim about this. The one place in the Rambam's Yad where he talks about the background for a Yom Tov, gives you a little bit of a historical background, is in Hilchos Hanukkah. Right? The Yad HaZaka, the Mishnah Torah, is not a storybook. It's not a history book. So when the Rambam tells you the halachas of Pesach, he doesn't get into the story of Pesach. When he talks about Sukkot, he doesn't talk about the story of Sukkot. He talks about Hanukkah, unlike even Purim, where he doesn't do that. When it comes to Hanukkah, the Rambam tells you this whole background of the story of Hanukkah. It's just something to think about. I'm not going to talk about it, but something for you to look into and maybe discuss with your Bayim, your Chaverim. But be that as it may, when the Rambam does introduce the story of Hanukkah, he uses the following lashon: the Bayisheni, Kishemolche Yavon Gozru Gzeirat Al Yisrael, when the rulers of Yavon enacted various decrees against Klai Yisrael, Ubitlu Daitam, and they tried to wear away at the dos, at the religion. V'lohenichu osam la'asok b'torah b'mitzvot. What language does the Rambam use? La'asok b'torah. What might you expect the Rambam to say? Not necessarily lashkicham tarasecha, because that language came later, but what would you think that the Rambam should say? To learn. And he says, tell us that they didn't allow us to learn Torah, but the Rambam doesn't say that. He says, la'asok b'torah. That's also an important lashon, I think. So we have to try to answer that question. What does it mean that Yavon tried to get Kaiser lashkicham tarasecha? Okay, keep that question in the back of your mind, and let's look at this medrash. This medrash, the famous medrash, it appears in many different collections of medrash. In fact, it's, even prior to the medrash, it finds its expression in Maseches Tainis. Slightly different than we have here in the medrash, but this is a well-known medrash. Someone want to read a little bit? The medrash here is darshaning the pasuk in Parshas Bereishis about the creation, and the medrash, and again, it's Chazal and Maseches Tainis as well, tell us that the various terms in the Pasuk refer to the different Golios, the different exiles that Klai Yisrael found itself in. So want to read? Some volunteer. Shalom Hatzah.
Shalom Lemagish?
Yeah.
Shalom Lemagish, Pasuk, Kriya, Golios, Ha'ai,
okay, so let's take a slow. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Pasar, Kiraya, Begolios. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Darshan, the Pasuk, explained the Pasuk in terms of the Golios. And then he went on to break up the Pasuk. Go ahead. Good. So the term in the pasuk, "V'artaisaso," that was a reference to Klai Yisrael's experience in Bavel. You don't have to read the pasuk, but again, he quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyah, which has that lashon of "Sohu Vavohu." Okay, and again, he brings a pasuk that has similar lashon that suggests that this might be a reference to the Golos of Modai. And here, for our purposes, "V'choshech." What does that mean? Just the taish. What does it mean? Choshech, darkness, is a reference to Yavan, meaning the episode during the story of Hanukkah. Why? Why is that a reference to Yavan? Because what did they do? Yavan hechshicha einehem shal Yisrael b'gzerosan. They darkened the eyes of the Klai Yisrael with their gzeros. And now the Midrash goes on to explain. How did they do that? How did they darken the eyes of Klai Yisrael? Someone? Sorry, go ahead. What's the name? Weinstein. Yeah, Mr. Weinstein. Just read the next line in the Midrash. Good. We'll stop there. This line itself, the famous refrain. Anyone heard this before? That Yavan told Klai Yisrael to do what? Right on the horns of your oxen, and in Maseches Tainis, by the way, it says it a little bit differently. It says on the horns of your oxen and on the foreheads of your donkeys. Klai Yisrael were told, according to the Medrash and according to Chazal, to write on the horns of their oxen and on the foreheads of their donkeys the following. What were they told to write? Ein lachem chelek be'elokei Yisrael. So they would have to say, Ein lanu chelek be'elokei Yisrael. What does that mean? Doesn't say I'm not a part of B'nai Yisrael. What's that? We don't have a portion in the God of Israel. Anything interesting about that? Okay, you're reading its explanation. Let's ask the question first. Right, what's the question? Okay, it doesn't mean we are not a part of God, but we don't have, if you want to be very literal, we don't have a portion or a part in the God of Israel. But what? Okay, maybe it's random. Why on the horns of your ox? But what about the phraseology? Is the phraseology funny? Okay, good. In other words, if Yavan wants to do what? If Yavan wants to tell Klai, so listen, there's no such thing as God, then say, right on the horns of your oxen, there's no such thing as God. But they didn't say that. What did they say? Right on the horns of your oxen, that you have no share in the God of Israel. So we want to ask, is there a God? Or is there no God? And if there is, what do you mean I have no share in the God of Israel? Yeah.
The Greeks weren't into no God, there was polytheism.
Okay.
There was clearly a God, just not the God of Israel.
Excellent. So you want to say there's no God of Israel. But still, it is saying there is a God of Israel. It's not saying there is no God of Israel. It's saying there's a God of Israel, but we have no share with that God of Israel. I think you're on the right track. I think you're on the right track. Either way, we have to try to explain the matter. So there are a few questions. Why the riding on the horns of the oxen, and why this particular message? Hal hashkicham tarasecha. So as a number of you already alluded to, there was a basic distinction between Yavan and Klai Yisrael. What was it? What was the basic point of diversion at that time between Yavan and Klai Yisrael? We'll start over here. What's your name?
Shuli. We were special. Like we had our own like one God, and they, you know, like we were like better than them.
And they didn't like that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Anyone else want to add that? What's your name?
Donnie. Physical versus spiritual?
What do you mean?
Yeah,
it's always safe, by the way. Physical versus spiritual always
no,
a safe bet.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
The Yavanim were into physicality and rejected spirituality, while the Jews were almost the opposite.
Very good. Okay, anything else? Any other ideas? So it sounds a little funny, but I always tell my Talmidim in this, and someone take me up on it. There was a very good movie that was produced for children. For little children, it was called Lights. Anyone ever see that movie? Lights? It was a cartoon. It portrays the story of Hanukkah, but it really shows how the Yavanim approached Klai Yisrael. At first, they didn't necessarily want to kill them. The story of Purim, you see that the enemies of Klai Yisrael wanted to kill them. It was a physical onslaught, and they wanted to wipe out the Jews. And that's why our celebration, in turn, is a physical one. There's a chiv of Seuda on Purim. There's no chiv Seuda per se on Hanukkah. because the main point of our celebration is not a physical one. It's more in terms of the spiritual struggle. But in that movie, they portray that originally the Hellenists, they wanted to embrace the Jews. They wanted the Jews to be their buddies. They wanted to get along with them, and they wanted to level the playing field. They wanted to even the playing field. What happened when they saw that Kaisel was not buying into that? Then they said, okay, then we have to kill him. But what was that idea about physical, spiritual, about being open, not open, about being the same? So this is an idea that's expressed extensively by the Maharal, and I'm happy to have an opportunity to quote a little bit of the Maharal. In Eretz Yisrael, Maharal is very popular, certainly among those that learned in the Mizrahi Yeshivas, where Rav Kook popularized the teachings of the Maharal. It's very rare that you go into a Talmud of a Mizrahi Yeshiva and not find a set of Maharal in his house. In America, Maharal, for whatever reason, is not very popular, except in one place. Talmidim of the Yeshiva Chaim Berlin are big into Maharal. Why? Because their Rebbe, Rav Huttner, was also a big proponent of the Maharal. So in the so-called Yeshiva Shvelt, you have Talmidim of Chaim Berlin being proponents of Maharal. And Eretz Yisrael, those that came from the Mizrahi movement, also very big adherents to the Maharal. But otherwise, Maharal sort of, I would say, more widely known for something that he probably did not do than for what he did. Right? Maharal is probably most widely known for having created the Golem, which may or may not have happened. But what he certainly did do is he left us a trove of Divrei Musar and Divrei Chizuk and Hashkafa that for whatever reason is really not that widely taught and learned. I don't know why that is, but if you have the opportunity, I would say take advantage of it and look at the Maharal from time to time. You'll be happy to see there are some very nice ideas there. So Maharal expresses this idea that is the difference between Yavon and Klal Yisrael in a number of different places. So we'll go through them very quickly. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read through the entire tracts in each case, but in the Sivas Olam and in the Sivat Torah and Perek Yedalad, the Maharal explains that there's a basic difference between Torah and other disciplines, other areas of, we'll call it, knowledge. So the Maharal says, interesting thing, and this is, I found quoted in a number of other places, unfortunately not in every case quoted in the Maharal, but the Maharal seems to be among the first to have made this particular point. The Maharal says that if you look in the Gemara in Brachos, the Gemara says that when you see a Chacham, see a Torah scholar, there's a certain blessing that you make. Like any other phenomenon that you witness, you make a bracha. If you see a rainbow, you make a bracha. If you see a large ocean, if you see a very ugly person, if you see a very attractive person, all these things require some form of Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a person sees a Chacham, so he says, let's take a look together. He says, Baruch Shenos, Shechalak Mechachmasol Yireyav. Shechalak Mechachmasol Yireyav. God who gave out some of his Chachma to those who fear him. When he sees a Chacham, quote unquote, from the Umos HaOlam, when he sees a scholar, a professor, someone who is recognized for being a very wise person, he also makes a bracha. Even though this person is not endowed with any great Torah knowledge, he's a chacham. So a person has to recognize that this chacham somehow came from a Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. What's the bracha that you say in that case? Not shechalak mechachmaso l'yireyav, but instead shenason mechachmaso l'basa v'dam. You'll find those brachas in the Siddur, if you like. These are talach l'maisi, you make those brachas. So the Maharal says, why the distinction? Why when we're praising a Torah scholar, or praising a Kadosh Baruch Hu, after witnessing a Torah scholar, do we say Shecholak Mechachmaso, as opposed to the bracha that's said upon seeing a generally wise person, where you say Shenosan? So the Maharal says an interesting thing, and this becomes something of a theme for him. He says, Ma Hefresh Bein Zeh L'Zeh? Aval Hefresh Asher Yesh Bein Zeh L'Zeh? I'm in the fourth line or so of that Nesiv HaTorah paragraph. It sounds like in the case of the Nesina, something's being given to him, but Kavayachal, nothing's being given up. Nothing godly is being given up. Something's being given to him, but it's sort of outside. It's nothing. I gave you something, but I didn't lose anything. I didn't give up anything. As opposed to where Hashem is endowing or aiding a person somehow in acquiring Torah knowledge, what he has is different, what he has is godly, and there it's appropriate to use the term shecholak. If I give you something, then I'm sort of giving something up of myself. So we don't speak about a Kadosh Baruch Hu as being divisible in parts or being subject to giving something and being missing something, obviously. But instead, the Maharal is saying that that term was chosen to show that what was given was godly. There's something different about the quality of the knowledge that the Torah scholar has as opposed to that which is in the possession of the general scholar. Kiba masha him bus of a dom, what a physical person is, limited. Chamorim hespi Hashem Yisparach lahem chachma ve'inza min amitzas ha-chachma Hashem Yisparach she'inivdel ha-talokis. But that which is given to the Torah scholar, that's different. That's sort of, we'll call it supernatural. And we'll see that that comes back in a minute. Right, let's go on again, just to show that this idea is a refrain, is a repeating theme, is a motif to the Maral, and then we'll see how it specifically affects us in the context of Chanukah. Someone want to read the next paragraph from the Sivat Torah, Perek Aleph? Anyone? Well, friends, why don't you do it? Bottom, the bottom paragraph. Start, Lashon Hara. This is a nice idea in general. Lashon Hara, you see it? In the Sivat Torah, Perek Aleph. Lashon Hara. Yeah, start from its underline. What's Hora? No, not with an I, with an Aleph. What? Re'ia is to see. Insight? Okay, we're getting a little closer. Hora is the way that we refer to Psak. Right? To be Mora Hora in front of your Rebbe, that's not appropriate. A posek is referred to as a mora hora'a. He gives over hora'a. Why is it called hora'a? So you can explain. What does that mean, the lashon zeh? He said, just like the hora'a is called hora'a, a psak is called a hora'a in the same way that the Torah is called in this language. What language? Torah. Torah and hora'a are the same lashon. So on the same lashon, what is that lashon? He's gonna explain. No secret. What does that mean? It's not just called what? It's not just called chokhmah. It's not just called knowledge. I mean, it is knowledge, but it's not just called knowledge, right? We say chokhmah satorah, but we call it Torah. What's that? Tun is an understanding. Tun is an understanding. This is not just called an understanding. What happens when I understand something? I understand something, and then what? And then so what? All right, let's explain to me Euclidean geometry. Now I know that. Now what? Am I any better for it? Maybe if I'm an architect or I'm a mathematician, so maybe it helped me out. But am I a better person? Does it help me in any other area of life? I know more of that one thing, though. Didn't help me out in an expanded way, right? I know more facts. I know more information. Torah, he says, is not like that. Let's see what Torah does. Ki hefreshesh. There's a distinction. Mora. See, there's that lashon. Mora. What's a Torah guide called? Mora Darash. What's a person who... What's that? Mora is a teacher. It shows you. It shows you the way. Torah is something that instructs a person how to live life. Makes a person a qualitatively different individual than he was before he learned. Go ahead, keep going. But derech ahu tachliso ha'achron. What's that? Tachliso ha'achron? His final goal. His end goal. Torah is going to help you get to your end goal. What's your end goal? Olam haba, right? Your end goal is to be the most perfected you could be. We live life here as physical beings, right? Charged with living a spiritual life. Why? Because the more spiritual a person lives in this world, the more perfected he is, the more of a portion he's going to have in Olam haba. So he says that is what the Torah does for a person. The Torah shows him how to be that person that is worthy of Olam haba. Masha'esh ha'adam lahagiyo. Who El Olam Haba, and that's not found in any other chokhmah. I can know history, I can know math, I can know science, I can know English literature. It's not going to necessarily help me be the person who is on a trajectory for Olam Haba. Now, it's not to say that each one of those things are not going to make you a little more knowledgeable and might make you able to make better decisions. That's for sure true. But as a general hashkafas achayim, you're not going to get from one of those disciplines, as opposed to from the Torah. The Torah's whole purpose is to make us better individuals. All right, let's quickly turn to the second side of the page. Again, I don't want to belabor the point, but the Maral expresses it again. Thank you. And it's Tiferes Yisrael. One more volunteer? It's the same idea. glad you went.
Okay.
What's your name?
Moshe.
From where? From the way that's on the line. He's again explaining why Torah is called Torah. It's the same idea.
Nick Race. Nikrais HaTorah B'Shem Torah. Lo Nikrais B'Shem Chokma. Ki HaTorah Av She'ishra HaChokma. Ein HaChokma She'id HaTorah Chokma.
Miduk Dekes. What does that mean? Stop there. What does that mean? He says it's true. Torah is certainly Chokma. We would never say that Torah is not Chokma. But what's the difference between the Chokma of Torah and the other Chokmas? Well, when we speak about dikta, right, we speak about being precise in the way you pronounce things. So what does he mean when he says it's not a chachma dikdakas? Doesn't mean it's not precise. It's not limited. It's not focused. Not focused in a negative way. I'm saying not focused in a specific scope. Like we said before, if you know geometry, that's what you know. If you know organic chemistry, that's what you know. You don't necessarily know how to treat your friend. You don't necessarily know what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. Well, if you know organic chemistry, maybe you know what's healthy and what's not. But you don't necessarily know how to navigate other situations in your life. If you know Torah, you know how to treat your friend. You know how not to treat your friend. You know what you should do when you get up in the morning. You know what you're supposed to do if you want to eat a kosher animal. Keep going.
Melamedes.
Good.
Shows you the and guides you on the way of life.
Exactly. I think it's
Yikna
would mean if I would sell it to you. Yikna is he's acquiring for himself, right?
Yikna ha lacha achrona vehi
had vekus boyus bara shenafsho tia. Right? How to live the life of a ben olam haba. What does that mean to be live the life of a ben olam haba? To live the life in a way that a person's soul clings to his creator. To live the life such that a person will be zocha to tachliso achram. That's what one gets from Torah that he's not going to get from any other so-called chachma. And that's what the Maral says in the Ner Mitzvah. Ner Mitzvah is dedicated to Hanukkah. One of the Sifrei Maral dedicated to Hanukkah. And in the Ner Mitzvah, he takes all this and says that was the struggle with Yavam. As you guys mentioned at the beginning, I'm sorry, you know, Donnie and Shuli. You mentioned at the outset that was part of the struggle of Yavam. Yavam could not tolerate this idea. Yavam was not necessarily against knowledge. They weren't against culture. They were into it, right? What they do? They drew paintings, they made sculptures, they idealized the body, the human form. In fact, the Maral says that was their essence, basically. They were mired in the physicality. They couldn't entertain anything beyond the here and now and the physical. And he has a whole explanation of how that's why Hanukkah is 8 days and not seven, and we don't want to get into that, because eight is representative of those things that are beyond seven, and seven is always symbolic of the natural order, right? 7 days of creation, eight is Memala Menateva. Bris Milah, 8 day. Hanukkah, 8 days. So he says in the Ner Mitzvah, we'll just read the pertinent language, and then I'll take some comments, but I want to make sure I don't take away too much of your Seder time. So he says like this, Kikol Inyan HaMalchus, he goes through the different subjugations of the different periods in time, and he says, this is what the Malchus of Yavan tried to do. What does that mean? Hayimavakshim HaChachma. They were big proponents of Chachma. In fact, as I said before, in that movie, The Lights, you see that they tried to share their Greek culture with Klal Yisrael. But when they saw that the Jews were not buying into the Greek culture, and they weren't necessarily willing to acculturate, what happened? Kemoshim avur mena yavanim, kemoshim yizbar. L'kachim nostem daitam al Torah. That's why they set their sights on the Torah. They went out to wage war with the Torah. Ulavatel osa me Yisrael. And to take this Torah away from Klal Yisrael and say what? It's not yours uniquely. There's nothing special about your relationship with this knowledge base. It's like any other wisdom. Anyone can learn geometry. Anyone can learn physics. Anyone can learn how to paint. Anyone can learn how to be a bodybuilder. This is all some form of chachma, and it's out there for everyone. In fact, there are those that make the point that that's the very reason why it was Yavan who brought about the Targum Shivim. What's the Targum Shivim? That was the Septuagint, the first translation of the Torah into a foreign language. And that was not considered a very good thing. But why did they do that? Why did they try to bring that about? Because that was the point they were trying to make. But the Torah is not miyuchad for you. It's not special. There's nothing unique about it. It's a chachma like anything else. And how are we going to show you that? How are we going to demonstrate that? We're going to make it translate into Yavam. We're going to make it translate into Greek so everyone can have it. And he goes on. They could not tolerate, he says, that the Torah was Yoser Chachma and Yoser Elyona, that it was any more lofty or elevated than any other Chachma. Min Chachma Ha'anushis Shehayalam. Any other physical, natural Chachma that they recognized and they acknowledged. And he goes on to say, that's what the Gemara tells us, that if he says about the Umos Ha'olam, if a person tells you that there's Chachma Bagayim, that you can believe. Because they have Chachma. But if they tell you there's Torah Bagayim, no, I'll tell you, not allowed to believe that, because it's not true. Because Torah is something that is unique to Klal Yisrael, and the whole Gisha of the Umos Ha'olam to knowledge is totally antithetical to the idea of a Torah. Yeah.
That's the first question you asked, why did you say that Ashki comes from?
Yeah.
Could you say that it's not literally talking about the actual Torah, that it's talking about that the Yuvanim were trying to make us forget our way of life?
Good.
The Derech on which...
I think it has a lot to do with it. I think it has a lot to do with it. So that's what we're leading up to here. So now we understand what the basic distinction was in the way of thinking of Klal Yisrael and the philosophy of Yavan. So how did what the Medrash says happen seek to further this goal of Lashkicham Torasecha? So this idea, based on the Maral, I believe, in trying to explain this Medrash, is expressed in a number of places. I saw Reb Chaim Friedlander has this in his Sifsei Chaim. One of my Rebbeim, Reb Chaim Yaakov Goldberg Zatzal, who is Rosh Shiva Kerem Biavna, has a similar idea. I saw the Chuvas Evan Hapina also has such an idea. And that is that it wasn't that they were out to outlaw Torah learning. Not at first. They weren't outlawing Torah learning. What were they saying? You can learn Torah, but don't look at it as anything special. Don't look at it as this idea that you claim it is, that something that's going to bring you to the next world. It's nothing. It's like all other chokhmas. That's what we want you to think it is. And if you look at it like that, we have no problem. You'll be like us, we'll be like you, and we'll all get along just fine. And that's the idea of Lashkicham Torah Secha. What does it mean, Lashkicham Torah Secha? Oh, because the Medrash says that what do they have to write on the horns of the oxen? Not we hate Torah, not we're not going to learn Torah anymore, but we have no chelek in the God of Israel. So again, Chaim Friedlander and others that I mentioned, they have the same idea. What was the idea? To show that Torah is nothing unique. That's what it means. This Torah is not going to bring us to any chelek, not going to bring us any special relationship with the Creator. That's what they wanted us to believe. Why on the horns of oxen? Again, it wasn't that we're not allowed to learn. That's important. Now, you can learn, but don't look at something special. Don't look at something special. It's just like all other chachmos. It's like all other chachmos, and how am I going to show you that? Because I want you to write on these horns and on the foreheads of your donkeys, we have no chelek in God of Israel. There is a God of Israel. That's true. Maybe there's a God. But this chachma is nothing special. This chachma has nothing to do with the God who created the world. Maybe didn't. We don't know. But don't look at your Torah as something special and unique and separate and apart from all the chachmas. But why ride it on your donkeys and why ride it on your horns? Yeah.
Maybe because those are animals that are like herded quite easily, and it's going to show how like Torah is like a way of conforming and leading. Like,
okay, that's very deep. That's very deep. All right. I mean, the Yavan wanted us to make all those steps. That's a nice idea.
Well, they figure that if we're learning Torah, they're like intelligent.
Right, we're going to be lamdanim. We're going to study. Okay, I like that. I didn't think about that. That's a nice idea. Okay, I think there's another idea, but that's very good. Yeah.
For the carbon? Because the soul was one of the carbonates. That's
when
they wanted to take away everything spiritual. They wanted to make everything in the
Beis Mikdash. But how is this specifically pointed at the Torah learning?
Because it's things when they were used for Hashem and making it just, you know.
That would be more in terms of mitzvah. So hear what he's saying. If they had to write here, we don't believe in karbanos. We don't bring karbanos. But Lahashkicham Torah Secha?
It's a regular story. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you mean there's no system of mitzvahs?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Many animals represent physicality. There's no spiritual side to them.
Okay, good. That's definitely true also. We're going to show you're going to put this back on a physical thing. So physical that this is something that you deal with all day. Agricultural society, using it to plow your field, to work your land. Yeah?
Okay, similar to that when you see animals, usually when you're at work in the field, and that's when you're at a low point. That's when you're vulnerable.
Okay, good. Low point, vulnerable. I like that also. So I'd like to try to make a suggestion that I think incorporates a lot of what you're saying. So, given that this was the struggle, that the struggle was... that the struggle was specifically over how to approach the Torah, whether it's Chachmas Hashem that's going to bring a person to his Tachlis Acharon or not. That's Lashkicham Torah Secha. I can't tell you not to learn, but I could do something to make you begin to look at your learning as something different. You come there to show you learn for a year, 2 years, whatever it is. I can't take that away from you. That's what you did that. But what could I do? I could Lashkicham Torah Secha. I can make you begin to look at it differently. How am I going to do that? I'm going to send this message. The message that this has nothing to do with God. But how am I going to do that? You know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to bombard you with it. I'm going to make you write it on your oxen and on your donkey's forehead, and you're going to see it every day. You're going to see it every day when you go out to work. And it's going to resonate in your head, whether you want it to or not. You can't walk down the street in Eretz Yisrael and not see a sticker about nah, right? It's not possible. I mean, people don't necessarily know what it is, but they know there's something out there, nah. Some places, you know, everyone loves Burgers Bar. You know that. Why? Because you see the bumper stickers all day long. Now, maybe some people are going to be interested. They're going to say, oh, what's Burgers Bar? What's nah? What's, you know, vote for Obama? You're going to look into it because you're constantly seeing those signs. And Chazal understood, and I think this is the idea of the Medrash, Chazal understood that a person's environment plays a very important role on his development. You're in yeshiva, you're in Etzel, you're with your bayim that love you, with chavirim, they're all doing the same thing. Everyone's doing fine. You're learning, and everyone knows it's important. But what happens when you go outside the Dalat Kol Sefer Beis Medrash? Now what happens? You know what happens now? Now it's Lashkicham Torah Secha. Because now you're bombarded with bumper stickers. What are the bumper stickers? You have a secular world that's telling you, listen, look at your Torah like we look at English literature. Look at your Torah like we look at psychology. Look at your Torah like we look at sociology. You can have your Torah, but don't look at anything else other than a subject. And that's what happens on college campuses, and that's what happens in the secular world, and you have to be very careful about that. And just to demonstrate that point very quickly, because I know you're all anxious to get to your Siddurim, but the Pirkei Elazar says, and you can look at the rest of the Makoros on your own time, I won't go through all of them, I'll just mention them outside. Pirkei Elazar says, if a person surrounds himself with Rishayim, he's going to be affected adversely, no question about it. And he makes a comparison. Comparison is, if a person goes into a perfumery, and doesn't buy anything, and he walks out, he's going to have a nice smell. Why? Because he was surrounded by nice smelling things. Well, how do you know, if a person surrounds himself with righteous people, people that are doing the right thing, people that are focused on the ideals of Torah, so he's bound to be affected in a good way. But let's say he's around people that are not so good, people that don't necessarily have the right ideals. Well, later that person's going to be affected. And it might not happen the first day, it might not happen the second day, it might not happen the third day, but you know what? Seeing the bumper stickers every day, day after day, seeing that message on your ox and on your donkey, it's going to have an effect on a person. And you find this idea expressed even in halacha. There's halacha that a person's not supposed to look at a rasha. It's based on a Gemara Megillah. And in talking about that halacha, Shari Tshuva says, you know why you're not supposed to look at a rasha? So you can take a look very quickly. He says, Aslo taka v'dimus adam rasha. You're not even supposed to look at him, because that's a derivative of the issue of being meschaber l'rasha. You're not supposed to keep company with Russia. You're not supposed to be buddies with Russia. Okay, so I won't be buddies with Russia. Why can't I look at him? Why can't I gaze at the Russia? So Shari Tshuva says, that's one step away from being meschaber. Because what's going to happen? You keep looking at the Russia, you keep gazing at the Russia. You're going to begin over time, might not happen the first day, but you're going to become enamored with that Russia. You're going to begin to identify on some level with the Russia. You're going to want to find out more about him. You know, he's not such a bad guy. Right? The more you look at him, the more you gaze at him, the more you are connected.
And you want to help him.
What's that?
And you want to help him.
Right? You have to be on the level before you put yourself in that situation. Not every person is on the level to be able to try to be Makari of someone who's out to get him. There are people like that, but I would say the average guy leaving after Shana Bet is not yet on that level. Maybe there's an exceptional person that might be. But again, you find this idea in other mitzvahs as well. You're not supposed to look at a Avodah Zarah. Right? You're not supposed to stare at a Avodah Zarah. You're not supposed to go to Makom Avodah Zarah. You're not supposed to use the Avodah Zarah as a frame of reference. Why? Because you're not supposed to have a relationship with the Avodah Zarah. You're supposed to distance yourself. The Rama says if you're walking on the side of the street and there's a Makom Avodah Zarah and you can go on the other side, you should go on the other side of the street. If you're giving directions to someone, you shouldn't say, okay, make a right at the Makom Avodah Zarah. People do it all the time. You're not allowed to do that. So the Sefer Chino says, as an outgrowth of that, you're not supposed to look at it. Why? And he said, unbelievable thing. He says you shouldn't look at it, but Surah Sha'osin of Da Kade Ladas Echas Avodasa, Mikolza Yesiba Shetiya Nifta Acharea Vatavda. Because you know what's going to happen? You keep looking at it and you keep thinking that it's something that's not so bad. If you make your business to cross the street every time there's a place of Avodah Zarah, and you don't look at it, it's always going to be something that it's antithetical to your way of life. But once you begin going there to look at the art, and you go there and you make nice comments about it, and you say make a right over there, and you stare at it, what's going to happen? It's now part of your way of thinking. Maybe it's not so bad. Ultimately, Sefer Chinuch says that might lead you to come to worship it. Now obviously it's not going to happen in one day, it's not going to happen in 2 days. But more and more, the more you allow it in, the more it affects you. So I'd say that's really for us as Bnei Torah, for those of you that are learning here, and those of you that are staying, and those of you that are going, at some point you're not going to be in the basement all day. And whenever that time comes, you have to be very careful about this. Because there's a lot of bumper stickers out there. There's a lot of carne shor, and there's a lot of foreheads of donkeys, and there are a lot of things that the secular world is sending at you. And they're very smart, and it's done on purpose. And there's a whole industry, it's called marketing. And it's all based on this idea that the things that you see affect your buying habits. And things that flash on a screen affect what you think about later. Right? Freud knew that. Things that you saw during the day can affect what you dream about. Things that you're thinking about. And it's true with Torah also. At some point, you're not going to be in a place where Torah is the primary pursuit of the day. You're going to be in a place maybe where you're doing other things, whether it's working or in college or in graduate school. And at some point, you're going to now have to say, well, what about my Torah? So if we fall victim to Lashkicham Torah Secha, Torah just becomes a subject. Ultimately, you're not going to be involved in Torah anymore. I don't mean you. I'm saying a person who allows that to happen. But if you're vigilant and you understand that Torah is, as the Maharal says, it's the thing that's Mora Derech, the thing that makes us a person who's on a path to Olam Haba, we're going to treat it much differently. So I'll just leave you with the bracha that you should continue to be matzliach in your learning, to try to stay here as long as possible. And if it comes to pass that you can't be, you should make good decisions and you should put yourself in a situation and don't wait till you get back to America. Don't wait till you get back to America to say, I'll work it out then, because you're going to be 6 months later and you won't have worked it out. You work it out before you leave. Decide where you're going and what you're doing before you leave Eretz Yisrael. Make yourself an arrangement, make yourself a situation that works for you and your particular needs and your particular approach to learning and something that works, you know, within your lifestyle. But don't wait until it's six months into your first semester back in college and look back and say, what happened? So I'm here. I'll stick around. I'll talk privately to anyone who wants to hear a little bit more about the yeshiva and anyone else that wants just general advice or recommendations about things to do after they can no longer learn full time. I'll be here and I'm available to anyone who wants to talk to me. Okay, thank you for your kind attention. Like I said, you can see me monthly. You can keep the sheets if you want. If you don't, I'll take them back. I have a couple of CDs if anyone wants. Even if you don't want to see me privately, but you want a CD, you can take a CD. That's you, a couple of sheets. What's your first name?
Mark.
Mark. Where are you from? You look very familiar. Is
that me
here? No, I didn't. All right. Okay, nice to see you. Yeah, I'm here. I'm here for you. I have a couple of CDs. I have some brochures. Thank you. What's that?
Brochure? You want a brochure? You want to see the new pictures, right?
Did you book out last time? No, you were there. Were you here last year?
Yeah. You came to the seesaw. Not that many guys were there, though.
I was there.
Right?
You were there.
What do you think?
I remember you spoke